Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So here we are again. Catherine Whittaker is in Roland Garros. I am not, but I'm back on the Tennis Podcast. Delighted to be so as well after another cracking day. I heard, Catherine, somebody say earlier on that it was stinkingly hot over there today. I mean, it doesn't look it on TV, is it?
There have been brief moments where it's been stinkingly hot, but it's also been chilly. It's been, well, at the moment it looks like the apocalypse is coming again and the storms might break over Roland Garros. But yeah, it's been a little bit of everything, but overall pretty pleasant. And up until this point, it's 12 minutes to nine. The rain has stayed away, so we can all be grateful for that, David.
Yes, well, when you were talking to Telegraph tennis correspondent Simon Briggs yesterday, it was all sorts of chat about Serena Williams and all the matches you'd had yesterday. And today, I mean, there have been some really close calls for some of the big names, but actually, they've all pretty much survived, haven't they? I mean, the one that really stands out to me is Zverev, because this was a huge test for him and he came through it.
Yeah, there was a point when Nishikori, Zverev and Dimitrov were all just embarking on fifth sets. And at that point, you'd have thought probably two out of three of them would end up coming through because you'd always, you know, back the higher-ranked player, I think, in a fifth set. But in the end, all three of them came through. Zverev, a very easy fifth set in the end against Dusan Lajovic, who I think was struggling physically towards the end. Very similar story, in fact, with Grigor Dimitrov and Jared Donaldson. Dimitrov, in his celebrations of that victory, kissed his legs. He bent over, bent pretty much double. And at the time, I thought he was kissing his knees, but that was just the portion of his leg that he was able to reach while bending over. He was thanking his legs for getting him through because he faced an inspired Jared Donaldson today whose body let him down at the last. I think he lost 10-8 or 11-9 in the fifth set. And Jared Donaldson was cramping very badly for the majority of that fifth set. And David, do you know what that caused him to do?
What?
Underarm serve. We've had an underarm serve at Roland Garros. I think we've had two of them, actually. I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought maybe it hadn't been I was watching on the monitor in our Eurosport little gallery that we have here, and I caught it at the corner of my eye, and I assumed maybe it was a dummy run of a point, or he was hitting the ball to the ball kids or something. I just could not believe my eyes. And I think I then fist pumped just at the joy of having witnessed an underarm serve. I know it was more out of necessity than anything else from Donaldson because his legs simply wouldn't propel him up to the ball to serve. But still, many a player has been in that situation before and not dared hit an underarm serve. So I kind of loved it and it won him the point. Grigor Dimitrov rifled the ball long. I think the second time he did it, it didn't win him the point. But 50-50, not bad at all. So, Jared Donaldson, that is the sort of match that will harden him and go on to make him fitter and stronger. But Grigor Dimitrov... Yeah, he said it was his fitness trainers that got him through that match today and nothing more. He said he felt he could have gone on for another couple of hours, which is pretty cool. Yeah. And Nishikori also a winner in five sets on Chatrier against the sometimes brilliant and the sometimes ever so flaky, now grey-haired Benoit Paire. 2 days ago, he was white-haired. He's now grey-haired, so he's obviously preparing for all possible scenarios of old age.
Actually, I have had somebody write in to us on Twitter, at Tennis Podcast, can you please discuss Benoit Paire's hair and update us on how his callback for his audition for James Bond's Evil Henchman number 2 is going?
I just don't know what to say, David. I really am left speechless by the hair of Benoit Paire. And then he also wears a hat during the match. So then I sort of think, well, what was the point in doing that to yourself, Benoit? If you're not going to show it off on the biggest stage, yeah. I mean, yeah. Again, it's not necessarily a style decision that I would make, but good luck to him.
See, I can forgive Benoit Paire quite a lot, you see, because he has got his own Twitter account in which on a daily basis he just takes a picture of his own food, his own dinner.
Yeah, and I know that's the thing I hate most in the world, David, people that photograph their food for social media purposes.
I know, I get criticised every time I try to send you a picture of what I've had for dinner. So, I like it. And
no one cares but you. Not you personally. I mean, yes, you personally in this instance, but nobody cares.
What if I come up with an absolute joy of a dish?
I don't even care what, you know, Donald Trump is having for dinner. So I definitely don't care what Benoit Paire or David Law is having for dinner.
Well, thanks a bunch. Well, I'd love to know what you're having for dinner, but then I can already guess it's a cheeseboard deluxe.
Yeah, it may or may not be steak and chips.
Yeah, no question. Wendy, by the way, was the one who was asking about Benoit Paire's hair. Just a quick name chit there. I was also asking, or I was also trying to big up my own sort of half prediction that Dusan Lajovic would cause problems for Alexander Zverev. And lo and behold, that's what happened. Although you weren't having any of that when I suggested that on our group chat.
I just think cause problems for, in quotation marks, is such an absolute cop-out of a prediction. What does that mean? Does that mean, you know, too vague. It's very much setting out a very fine net, a very broad net for grasping credit for yourself.
Yes.
That is obviously not a metaphor that works, but it's the end of a long day, David, and I hope the listeners understand what I mean.
Anyway, I can tell you're desperate for a
modicum of credit, and I will give you that, because boy did Dusan Lajovic challenge Zverev. Certainly, I mean, he was setting a break down and then he was two sets to one down, and you know, Lajovic is a flashy player, gorgeous single-handed backhand, moves well on the clay. He's been to the fourth round here before a few years ago. I think he ended up losing pretty handily to Novak Djokovic, but you know, he can play on this surface for sure. And Zverev looked full of self-doubt and was making a load of errors. And he's the sort of player, Zverev, that when it's not working, he can look very ordinary, because he's not necessarily a shot maker. That's not to say he doesn't have brilliant shots in his arsenal. It's just not the way he chooses to implement his game. So when it's not working, when it's malfunctioning a bit, he can look quite ordinary. And that's what he did today. And he had to dig very, very deep. And I just wonder whether this time that sort of a startling experience might harden him rather than weaken his confidence. I think it could just be the making of him in Grand Slam tennis. Watch this.
It felt like a huge deal to me, because looking back over his results of last year, he lost in four sets here to Fernando Verdasco, same sort of stage. He lost in four sets to Borna Coric. Now, stylistically, they may look different in terms of, you know, Verdasco's a left-hander and Coric is a two-hander on the backhand side, whereas Lajovic is right-handed and a single-handed backhand. But what they share in common is they are bulls of men. They just keep on coming, and they are broad-shouldered and they are tough and rugged, and they will take you on head to head and just keep on making you dig deep. And frankly, Zverev came up short twice last year in those matches, and he's done it before. And 2-1 down today against an opponent that was really just pushing him around. It was one of those moments where you thought, well, okay, I'm not saying this is win or bust in your career. Of course it's not. But sooner or later, if you're going to win a slam, you're going to have to win a match like this over the best of five sets. It ignited another five-set debate on social media with our good friend Ben Rothenberg. But I just felt that it was so interesting to look deep into the soul of Alexander Zverev and just see how much do you want this? How much are you prepared to give of yourself in order to keep going in this tournament? And well, he came up with the answers. No on-court coaching, and you know, I mean, that was a perfect example where if you had on-court coaching, he would probably have had a coach on after the third set. And I felt, as much as I love on-court coaching, it was just fascinating watching this guy work it out for himself. Congratulations to him. It was a really good win for him in the end.
Yeah, and I don't know if anybody's seen the transcript of his press conference, but it's definitely a different side of Sasha Zverev, whether it's a conscious decision or whether it's something that's coming naturally. He's been a bit... his attitude towards the press in the last couple of years has definitely been more of the, you need me more than I need you. There's certainly been a little bit of standoffishness and frostiness. You know, he's been repeatedly asked about having his brother on tour because, you know, he's still new to a lot of people. A lot of these Grand Slams, certainly for the last couple of years, people have been seeing him and speaking to him for the first time. You know, not everybody travels on the tour week in, week out and has the chance to ask him this stuff. And he's given pretty short shrift to some journalists that have asked him what I consider to be... pretty legitimate questions. But today, David, he was absolutely charming, really, really charming. In particular, there's a radio reporter here from Yorkshire, and he has a really thick, gorgeous Yorkshire accent, but really, really thick. You know, even some English-speaking players have been struggling to interpret him. Kyle Edmund, incidentally, picked up on his Yorkshire accent after a couple of words uttered, stopped him in his tracks and said, "You from Yorkshire?" But yeah, Alex Zverev and this Yorkshire radio reporter, whose name I have actually forgotten, but will look up and will give credit on Twitter, so bear with me. They had this gorgeous little exchange about his Yorkshire accent in Sasha Zverev's press conference, and he has promised... has Zverev to give this guy at least one question should he make the final here. He's promised that just because of the gorgeousness of his accent, he will be granted a prized question with Alex Zverev should he make the final here.
Jonathan Pinfield is his name.
There we go.
I'm just looking up. He is on social media, as you can say, and he's delighted at his sudden fame at the hands of Alexander Zverev. And why not?
My producer and I are trying to think of creative ideas of ways we can somehow get him on the telly. We want to do some. We want to do some sort of legitimate feature with Jonathan Pinfield from Yorkshire.
Well, he looks absolutely bang up for it to me, and he's posted a picture of a flat cap on his tweet about the subject, which I think is magnificent as well. So well done. Anyway, and well done, Alexander Zverev. I just felt that was such a big win for him. And one of a few, as you say, Dimitrov going through in five. We've had a win for Jeremy Chardy in five over Thomas Burdick, whose miserable year goes on. Also on the men's side of the draw, you mentioned Nishikori eventually prevailing. Who was he playing again? I can't even remember who he's
Benoit
playing.
Pair. We've been through this. We've done the pair.
Tringaletti lost. Oh, no.
I know. Without
the
much fanfare
loser.
At all. I felt sorry for the bloke. You know, all of that. In fact, actually, when we were in the media scrum awaiting our pool interview with Marco Tringaletti the other day, you know, felt like an absolute circus, which incidentally he handled with such grace and humour. But somebody did lean over to me and sort of just pointed to this incredible sea of journalists and said, you know, it'll never ever be like this again for Marco Tringaletti, even with a good wind behind him. You know, even if he somehow ends up having, you know, a bit of a renaissance in his career, he's still not going to experience anything like this again. So I sort of had those words ringing in my ear as I saw him losing to Cecchinato on court 9 this morning. But anyway, it remains a wonderful story, regardless of the follow-up. It remains a wonderful story.
It is one of those, though, isn't it? I mean, it was kind of similar when Marcus Willis had his run a couple of years ago at Wimbledon. And you've got to be very careful not to assume that this is normal if you get wrapped up in that. Because, yeah, people disappear.
Marcus Willis, who incidentally has got himself in a lot of hot water on social media, hasn't he? But this is opening a can of worms in terms of a debate topic, which we might have to address at a later date when we can do it justice. But he said unequivocally that he doesn't believe any slams should give give wildcards to players not from the home country. He thinks they should all be reserved for players from that country. I think it was a topic that arose as a result of the controversy surrounding former champion Francesca Schiavone having to qualify here. But anyway, sorry, worms open, can open, worms everywhere. We will address it.
I think he slightly rode back from it in the end.
Did he?
And gave...
Yeah, didn't go down brilliantly, did it?
No, he got a bit of stick for that one.
But anyway, if only Goran Ivanišević were on Twitter, David, you can only imagine.
Well, I think Goran was somebody he cited in the end as somebody that he absolutely felt was warranting of a wild card, who was a hero of his. But actually, yeah, it's one we can maybe do in one of our listener question specials. Yes. If people are fancy us getting into that in a few weeks from now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Other matches of note today. On the men's side, Novak Djokovic, a straight sets winner, 7-6, 6-4, 6-4, over Munar of Spain, who is somebody
Jaume.
Nadal. What's his name?
Jaume Munar.
Jaume.
I was
great
taught
name.
That by a Spanish speaker today.
Thanks very much. I'm glad you did that.
just a mini episode of Pronunciation Corner for you there, David.
Yes. I hadn't got a clue, I must say. Anyway, all I knew is that Nadal said he'd got zero chance. But anyway, straight sets win in the end for Djokovic. I was interested in watching the commentary of Simon Reid and Mats Wilander talking about this match. And they kept remarking about how quiet Djokovic was out there, how little emotion he was expressing.
He was flat again, David. He was flat. It was like his first round match against Rogério Dutra Silva. You know, on paper, decent scoreline. Obviously, has good enough skills to get him through, but as soon as he gets tested, he's on current evidence, he's not going to pass the test. Maybe he needs a test to bring the energy out of him. That is entirely
possible. Well, I was
going to say,
but
right
do you not
now,
feel that he's just maybe playing within himself and keeping
maybe,
a little
but
bit
it,
of that in
but
reserve?
We used to see that from Djokovic summarily in the early stages of Grand Slams, and he still had the intensity. He was able to play within himself, but maintain the intensity. And it's different now. It's definitely different. He does more of the sort of, you know, slightly sarcastic celebrations of things. You know, a bit Andy Murray esque in that respect. You know, the sort of ironic eye rolls or ironic applauding of himself, and you know, he just looked sort of dejected quite a lot of the time. And yeah, it could well be that as soon as he gets a test like the Nishikori match in Rome, or indeed the Nadal match in Rome, he will rise to it, and that will bring the tiger out of him. But at the moment, it's not there.
No. Okay. On the women's side, Simona Halep, I was a little bit concerned, I have to say, for my prediction of a Simona Halep title victory when she lost the first set 6-2 against Alison Risk today. But disaster, predictions-wise, averted when she managed to reel off the next two 6-1, 6-1. Did you get to see any of that? I mean, what is the feel around the women's draw at the moment? Serena Williams aside, who's obviously taking all the attention, I mean, is there a feel over there as to who's a favourite at the moment?
I haven't heard anybody use the term favourite, even, David, in respect of the women's draw. I think odds-wise, the joint favourites are Halep and Svitolina. That was certainly the case at the start of the tournament. They were joint favourites, but, you know, not by any, you know, stretch at all. And I don't think today's performance against Alison Risk will do her odds any favours. I think it can largely be put down to nerves and tension from Halep. Those two definitely win the odd score line of the day award, 2-6, 6-1, 6-1, I think, Halep, the winner. I mean, obviously, she's by far the better player, particularly on this surface. So that shone through in the end, but she looked pretty paralysed in that opening set. So Is it just a first match thing? The fact that it was held over from yesterday could all be down to that, or it could be that she's feeling the stress of not having won a slam yet and being world number one. Time will tell. I think I spoke to Caroline Wozniacki's brother, Patrick, earlier, who travels with her a lot. I think he used to be a professional footballer. And he described her as having a chance, but not a big one, to win here. Very much playing down her chances of success on clay. Said she's got better on clay. You remember back in the day, she used to describe herself as feeling like Bambi on ice on clay in terms of movement. She just couldn't adjust to it at all. He talked about, you know, how she's added a drop shot to her game and she's done her best to adapt, but she'll never feel on clay like she does on a hard court. And you know, some people don't and can't, but he's certainly not counting her out of the running. But equally, I don't think on the clay she matches up to her second seeding necessarily. And then you look further down the draw and you're in sort of Kvitova, Pliskova territory. You might even have a little look at Kiki Bertens. You heard Simon Briggs's thoughts yesterday about Serena Williams. He thinks she's losing to Ash Barty. I certainly think that is the real test tomorrow against
you,
Ash Barty.
You spoke to Patrick Mouratoglou today, didn't you? How did that
I go? Did, yeah. He said he wasn't surprised by anything he saw yesterday. That was pretty much the performance he was expecting from Serena, which is interesting because he's the one that has seen her every single day for the last 6 weeks on the practice court. He said her movement wasn't quite as good as it has been in practice, but he puts that down to nerves. He said she was very nervous and it was every bit as big a moment for her as it was for us all watching her and anticipating, you know, the return of the queen of tennis, which I like. I like the idea of Serena Williams being nervous. I really, really like that. Tomorrow's the one, David. Tomorrow's when we'll see, I think.
She's allowed us in, hasn't she, Serena Williams, the last couple of years. She's allowed herself to show vulnerability. And I think that, I mean, look, she's always had a huge fan base, but vulnerability, I mean, frankly, that's something everybody feels at some point in their life. And I think it makes her a lot more relatable for the average fan who maybe hasn't bought into her story before, but I think increasingly is doing so.
Yeah, definitely. And I think using her powers for good. I think that's certainly how I see it. Now, look, I'm not suggesting she's a saint, and you know, it's no accident. I'm not naive. It's no accident that yesterday she rocks up on court in a cat suit, and today she's launching her clothing line. Look, I know that's not an accident. However, she has launched a clothing line today, David. Yes. Right.
Cool.
But equally, I think you can do that and you know, have a slightly selfish or more cynical motivation, depending how you want to look at it, and also realise the good you can do by walking onto court in a black like a cat suit and saying, I'm doing this for all the mums out there that had a difficult pregnancy. I think you can be both things, and I think letting us into her complexity as a character is a really good thing.
Yes, I would agree with that. A couple of other results. You mentioned Svitolina. She was a winner today, 6-3, 6-4. Petra Kvitova, 6-love, 6-4 over Lara Arruabarrena. So none of the worries that she had in the first round at all for her. Naomi Osaka, a straight sets winner. At the moment,
No one's talking about her. Nor Madison Keys, who we had big plans to go to Madison Keys' press conference today because We were looking for quotes on the cat suit, quite frankly, and Madison Keys was not requested
so
for press. That is how under the radar Madison Keys is flying.
Oh, really?
Here.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's just interesting, isn't it, to watch players like Keys and Osaka, who are massive hitters, who could just knock people off the court, and neither one of them yet have really found their feet completely on clay. I know Madison Keys did make the final of Rome a couple of years ago. She lost to Serena there. So it's in there. But can they string it together? Sloane Stephens, incidentally, won today 6-2, 6-2. And Patrick McEnroe immediately went on social media and said, you're looking at the champion. Sloane Stephens.
Hey, has he been listening to the tennis podcast with Simon Briggs?
Is Simon Briggs' prediction that as well?
Not officially. He didn't have the guts, David, to put it down, put pen to paper. But as he told me yesterday, that his heart was telling him Stephens.
Wow, that's a great one.
And I think with the encouragement of Stuart Fraser of the Times, he changed his mind to something more conservative. But yeah, he said he had a little feeling for Sloane Stephens.
Like it.
Dori
like
Kazakina like as well, currently on court, set and break up against Flipkins. No one's talking about her.
I think, well, David Law has been in his predictions because she's certainly in my quarterfinals at the very least. So, you know, we'll see, won't we? I wish I'd said that when she's a bit further in the draw. But anyway, out the corner of my eye, I can just see Cameron Norrie on court at the moment. He's 2 sets to love down against Luca Puy in fading light at Roland Garros. He did just have a break of serve, did Norrie, for 2-love in the third set, but alas, it has gone. Puy has played really well, and it's one of those really weird atmospheres, it seems to me, at least on the TV, you tell me, but it's quiet out there because it's so late. It's not like it should be right now.
It's completely bizarre, David. After the Nishikori pair match, the place completely emptied and there was absolutely nobody in the Philippe Chatrier Stadium for the Wozniacki match against Garcia Perez. And I think if that had developed into some kind of a contest, it might have filled up a bit, but it ended up being 6-1, 6-love or 6-love, 6-1. So nobody took a look at the scoreboard and thought, well, I'd better head back to Philippe Chatrier and take a look at that brilliant tennis. So it's ended up being an extremely bizarre situation for Cameron Norrie to experience for his first time on Philippe Chatrier. Absolutely not at all what he would have prepared for mentally. I'm just gutted for him because when I spoke to him a couple of days ago after his first round victory, he was so excited about the occasion and the moment and the atmosphere, and he was really up for being the underdog and responding to that and, you know, being a bit of a street fighter and experiencing a bit of Davis Cup style atmosphere. And he's just not got any of that. You know, we shot him, we got some shots of him hitting on Chatrier for the first time this morning. He had his hit and he looked really calm and composed. And then he sat down at the side of the court for the last 2 minutes of his allotted time. And he just took a video of his surroundings. And, he's a pretty cool customer, Cameron Norrie. He takes everything in his stride. But it was really nice to see him obviously relishing that moment. And then for it to, you know, look, first world problems. I know he's still playing a match on on court Philippe Chatrier, but it's just not, it's not what any of us would have envisaged. And yeah, it's just tricky, I think. And Puy, with his experience, is, let's be honest, rising to the bizarreness of the occasion, because the set and a half that I saw, it was some of the best tennis I've seen from Puy since, pretty much since we saw him beat Nadal at the US Open a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he's playing. He's doing to Norrie what he did to the British players in that Davis Cup tie as well. Just a couple of quick ones on this as well. I mean, Norrie's clearly trying to extend this overnight. I mean, it's 9:15 local time in Paris. I mean, they're not going to get beyond this set. So if Norrie could somehow win it, maybe it's a different match if they come back tomorrow. The final thing on this match, though, what is Tommy Haas doing in Luca Puy's coaching box, applauding him? I mean, this is the tournament director of Indian Wells. It seems like a slightly strange situation.
I don't have an answer to that, David. I'd clocked it as well. From what I can tell, nobody had wind of this. Everybody seems to be responding in the same way. And I would expect that to be a question that's answered in the post-match press conference. So watch this space.
I'd like to know. Do the
requisite information gathering.
Excellent. Right, well, Catherine, I think you better go get your cheese board in for the night. Tomorrow, we have a full order of play already out. It will include Kyle Edmund on the agenda. He is going to be up on court number 3, I believe, on the centre court tomorrow.
Brits back to back, David. Heather Watson followed by Kyle Edmund on court 3.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and on the court, Philippe Chatrier, there's Cilic to start, then Simona Halep against Taylor Townsend, Julian Beneteau against Juan Martin Del Potro, then Serena Williams against Ash Barty. I will not be missing that. Nadal is on Susan Longlon tomorrow, third on against Guido Paella. Pella, you're right, of course. That's right, I got that wrong last time. And on court 1, it is... They keep doing this to us, Catherine. Second time in a row that they've put Shapovalov and Sharapova back-to-back just to make my eyes hurt when I'm scanning down the order of play to get me confused. Another quick one as well. Court 18, Fabio Fognini against Elias Ima from Sweden, rather. He had his first Grand Slam win the other day, and the winner of that could play Kyle Edmund as well, who's up against Marton Fucsovics from Hungary.
Fucsovics,
and Lucy,
yes.
Lucy Safarova against Karolina Pliskova. That is a match to look forward to. Safarova reaching the final, of course, a few years ago. So, two sets of love for Puy as we leave you at 2-2. Check in on the results online. They'll be out there. We'll talk about it tomorrow if it's worth talking about, if something else different's happened. Catherine, thank you for your company. We have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Go and check out their website and the paper tomorrow. There's loads of good stuff from Simon. He's knocking out those words like crazy at the moment. We have been brought to you also in association with our executive producers, Melanie Bowes, tennisballs.com, and Triple S. And of course, our mascot is Charlie the Ferret. We'll be back with another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.